You are listening to the Doug Hagmann Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagmann.
And a good Monday morning to everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the west coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the east. Welcome to Hagmann. That's right, it's the Doug Hagmann Investigative Hour for today, Monday, December 10th, 2018. Day number 690 of the Donald J. Trump presidency, 573 days under siege by the Mueller, deep state coup, and many changes since we last spoke. Many changes have taken place, including the transcript released this weekend, Saturday, as a matter of fact, of Comey, and of course, what that tells us. In addition to that, the situation in Europe, specifically France, but extending well beyond France, I'm going to talk about that. In fact, I want to talk about that first, because what's taking place in France is being misrepresented by the mainstream media. You've got to understand, we are not getting the full picture of what's going on in Europe and why. And how this relates to us here in the West, all of us in the West. I don't care if you're listening to this broadcast in the UK or wherever it might be. If you're living in a Western country and you're listening to this broadcast, then, of course, this applies to you. Now, the deviation here is what is taking place in the United States, specific to the United States, as it relates to President Donald Trump. All right. Here's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, the riots or the revolt, maybe that's the most accurate phrase, revolt in France is symptomatic or is a consequence of this globalist push. It's a response to a globalist push. It's not only about a gas tax or petrol tax, which has since been, well, first it was delayed and now it's been scrapped, but yet the protests are not just continuing, they are actually getting stronger, getting bigger, involving more people. Now, understand this. You have an element of the socialist, there's a socialist element attempting to overtake or join the revolt. And that's not good, obviously. So you've got this kind of murkiness among the people who are revolting. And I was speaking to my wife about this, and I sat down last night, Sunday. I said, you know, what, in your view, what are the most important stories that you see taking place? I mean, just tell me. I mean, you're a normal person. I'm not. You're a normal person. When I say not normal, I mean, I'm kind of, you know, sometimes I just follow too far down rabbit holes and I don't see what's really taking place. I'm busy investigating one lead or another lead, but I'm not looking at the big picture. So I rely upon her to kind of tell me what she sees as the big picture. And she says, well, by far, what's taking place in France, I don't understand it, you know, to the extent that the media is trying to explain it just doesn't make sense, which most Americans and most in the West, I think, will agree. So here's, again, the program today is really the West or with the Yellow Vest riots, protests, revolt, maybe the revolution, I guess, is the proper term. And I would say that's in its pure sense, it's a revolution, will, in some sense, has already taken place here in the United States, but is gearing up to that level here in the United States. You can feel it, by the way. You can sense it. And I've read a number of articles this weekend, Town Hall and other articles, of course, of various locations, representing what's taking place in Europe. And, of course, I listened to Paul Joseph Watson, his take on things. And so this is kind of a compendium of all of that. But let me warn you, what we're seeing take place in France is coming to the United States in one way or another, and coming to all Western countries in one way or another. And this represents the pushback the nationalist populist pushback against the globalist in its purest and largest form, in its most comprehensive form. But no one here is talking about it within that structural framework. No, this is about a gas tax. This is about a fuel tax. Well, it's much more than that. This, what they won't talk about, this is about borders. This is about migration or immigration, illegal immigration to be specific. This is about a war against the working class, because it started out as a tax that punished the working class in France. Let me explain it this way, I guess, just conversationally. If somebody walked up to you in the street and just said, hey, you know, what's that all about over there in France, the yellow vests? Well, how do you respond? Because obviously, I just heard it was about this gas tax, and they were the protests were about this gas tax. Well, it's deeper than that, because what it does, it separates the urbanites, the people who live in the cities, and many who exist off the largesse of the government in a welfare kind of form, the people who rely upon public transportation and really don't contribute anything to the to society. Now, I'm making some broad statements here, so you'll have to just tailor this to your own. But what is taking place, or what is specifically with respect to the carbon tax, I suppose it would be the most accurate. This is punishing the farmers, the workers, the people who live in the urban or the suburban areas, the countryside, and especially the farmers, especially the people who do the work, the middle class working people, and especially the lower middle class working people. Well, they drive their vehicles, and of course, to work, and they drive farm equipment and things that take petrol, gas, whatever. And of course, this affects them the most. So these are the people who are revolting. And it's not just about the imposition of the gas tax, but it's about the imposition of government control, globalist control. And they recognize this for what it is. And that also involves, and I hope I'm making sense, this also involves the infusion of illegal labor, illegal aliens in the workforce to work less, of course, than the exploitation of the illegal aliens. That affects the people who abide by the rule of law and have farms and use French labor or legal labor. Of course, they're punished by doing so financially, to the point of economic ruin. All right, so if you understand the parameters, this is my view, if you understand the parameters and the impetus for the revolution, and I will heretofore call this a revolution, except those portions which have been hijacked by leftists, what we know here in America would be leftists or globalists or anarchists, no friends to the nationalist, I should say, then if we remove them from the equation, who are just attempting to exploit the situation for their own goals, take them out of the picture, then you've got, in the truest form, in the truest sense of the word, a revolution. And it's growing with into other countries. But if you use France as the example, as the exhibit, where Macron's globalist stance has pushed him to a low, record low of 18% approval rating. Think about this. Macron is the poster boy for the globalist agenda. He is the antithesis of Donald Trump. Think of Macron as being the equivalent of a Hillary Clinton in the Oval Office. Had Hillary Clinton won, we would have our own Macron in power here in the United States. Now, would the consequences, what we're seeing, would that would that be the same? I mean, would the results be the same? I don't know. I don't know. I suspect it would depend on a number of things, because as Americans, we are slow to anger, and as a consequence, we are slow to respond. We react quickly in some cases, but a reaction is different than a response. But anyway, so this is what's taking place in France, but it extends into Belgium, Netherlands. You can see this growing. It's like the European spring. Now, the mainstream media, interestingly, and this is something that Paul Joseph Watson had said, so the mainstream media is blaming, in part, this on a... Now, get ready to this is going to blow your mind, but Facebook algorithm that's being used to some change in the Facebook algorithm that's being used to fuel the rioters, as they call them, as the mainstream media calls them. So, which when, and Watson pointed this out as well, when, for example, the Arab Spring was taking place, the social media conglomerates together were actually pushing the Arab Spring, but the outcomes, the objectives, the agendas were much different, totally different. As a matter of fact, I would say 180 degrees different from what we're seeing today. This is a populist slash nationalist uprising as a consequence of the globalist agenda in the largest sense. This is a reaction or response to the imposition by Macron, their subjugation, his subjugation to a communist utopia known as the European Union, in forcing the French population to be subjugated under this European Union. He's a globalist through and through. The French people are sick and tired of this. They're sick and tired of unfettered immigration. They're sick and tired of Macron saying, well, you know, our future is that essentially no one in 25 years is going to be really French. We're all going to be absorbed into this Borg of a globalist population. France will be no more, essentially, is what he's saying. We are going to allow or subjugate the borders and country, the nation of France, and allow it to be absorbed into this globalist community. I'm not sure if I can make it any clearer than that, but the revolt and the revolution that we're seeing with the yellow vests is a response to that, but you're not going to hear this in the mainstream media, especially here in the United States. So it's much more than a carbon fuel tax or a fuel tax based on global warming, ultimately. But nonetheless, global warming, as it is, the lie of global warming, the lie of climate change, as it's presented in the way it's presented, well, it's a part of the globalist agenda. So it's just one part of a larger picture. And we need to have the larger picture in order to understand how it will affect each and every one of us. Because what I see taking place in France and across certain parts of Europe, like I said, Belgium and the Netherlands, and watch this movement grow exponentially over the next weeks and months, because it will. And watch, by the way, watch as well for portions of this movement to be hijacked in the media to focus upon the hijacked components of this movement as opposed to the grassroots epicenter movement that's fighting the globalists and misrepresent what's taking place there here. We have to be very careful and be very discerning as to who we listen to and what we listen or what is being said in order to get the real story. And that's really, I got to tell you, that ain't easy. That's not an easy task, because not only do you have the people who are pushing the information incorrectly, deliberately, you also have some well-meaning people attempt to weigh in through their video and channels and blogs and websites to explain this while totally, and I would say innocuously, well, not innocuously, but unintentionally misrepresenting the entire scene over there. But this is why we have to be very careful of who we listen to and what's being said, because this is a big deal. It's bigger than the Arab Spring, which was orchestrated. This would be more of a grassroots middle class, lower middle class revolt against the globalist, hence the nationalist populist versus the globalist. That, in a nutshell, is what we're seeing. And it's a revolt against the global elite power structure. Now, how does that even play into what's taking place here in America today? Well, obviously, I'm sure you know where I'm going with this. I have often talked about, or every day I say, okay, it's day number 690 today of Donald J. Trump presidency. He's a populist nationalist president. In other words, he is not part of the global elite power structure. Now, before you start throwing things at your radio and at your computer and whatever, just work with me for a second on this. All right, because what we would have had 690 days ago had Donald Trump not won is a Hillary Clinton occupancy of the Oval Office. Well, you have the globalists in the larger sense of fighting every step of the way, everything that President Donald Trump is doing before he was elected, even during as a candidate, and even as a private citizen. And now you are seeing the fight to remove him, the fight to take him down. And this is so important, because when we look at this subjugation of the United States to a globalist agenda, I mean, just think of the migration treaty that America has not signed on to. And you can see the other countries following suit, many other countries following suit, sans Canada, of course. Now, that's a big deal in terms of advancement of the globalist agenda. Now, this might seem very, very basic and academic for the majority of people out there, but sometimes I think we have to remind ourselves of the basics as we investigate and research and talk about the more granular aspects of what's going on, the pieces of the puzzle. Sometimes you have to refer back to the picture on the front of the box as you're working on the puzzle to put the pieces in place, as one example. And I think this is one time when it's necessary in order to contextualize what we see taking place in the Congress as we approach that January 3rd date of the complete takeover of the House that goes blue, and of course the Democrats get in charge. So when we look at what's taking place in America today, you see a couple of things that stick out that are really important. This last ditch effort to at least expose, perhaps not do anything, but expose the crimes of the intelligence community under Barack Hussein Obama, a globalist head placeholder. The face of globalism in America at that time, at least for 8 years, handing off supposedly to Hillary Clinton, who was going to finish the deal. But when you look at what Obama has done over 8 years, as well as Clinton, as Secretary of State, and then as operating an NGO in the form of the Clinton Foundation, you can see that the plans of the globalists were interrupted by President Donald Trump. Now, there are some concerns, and correct concerns, with respect to Donald Trump, and especially concerning his selection for Attorney General William Barr. Because next to me right now on my desk, I've got a very large book, the title of which is Compromised. All right. And I'm not going to get into that right now. But if the author, Terry Reid, is correct, and this is a Compromise is a book that goes back to Whitewater, what that was all about, into events forward, including Iran-Contra and the globalist operations under Clinton and moving forward. All right. So if you believe the author, then William Barr, President Trump's selection for Attorney General, was neck deep into intelligence community black operations, rogue operations. And his name, I think, was Robert Johnson, his fake name, as he was advancing the various aspects of working with people like Barry Seal and others, okay, handlers, Oliver North. That's William Barr, according to Terry Reid. And this is something that Diana West picked up on in her following her Twitter. And again, the book is Compromised, Clinton, Bush, and the CIA, How the Presidency Was Co-opted by the CIA. Terry Reid, along with John Cummings, talking about this. But as I look back here at the index, code names, colon, people. You look at, Johnson, comma, Robert, code name for William P. Barr. And this, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I know there's probably 8 or 9 lines of page numbers where he's referenced in this book. And what this book is about, and I just want to be really clear. By the way, I had gotten this book secondhand, and it's interesting because the front, as I open the front cover, I see it's personalized to someone by the name of Scott by one of the authors. I'll leave it at that. And it's data. It's got an interesting date on it, and it's interesting anyway. But what this is about is reportedly the true story of Bill Clinton's political sellout to the CIA. That's where it starts, and his unbridled political ambitions and his campaign pledge to create jobs for people of Arkansas that led him to compromise his ideals in exchange for CIA support in his bid for the presidency, how he basically sold himself out to the intelligence community. And that's where this story starts. Now, what does that have to do with things of today? Well, again, if this story is accurate, and Terry Reid, he's a former Air Force intelligence operative. He served with the most secret project of the Vietnam War, Task Force Alpha. And it was a highly classified intelligence gathering unit of that period as a young man. And, of course, as a civilian intelligence asset later, he worked for the CIA and FBI on projects the law had barred these agencies from undertaking. And his problems subsequent. I mean, it's interesting how his story somewhat, it coincides with many of the, I don't want to equate it necessarily. I'm just putting the book down here. So if I move the microphone, it kind of parallels Kevin Shipp. And we all know who Kevin Shipp is, a friend of the program. He's a former CIA officer and, of course, a recognized expert in things relating to the CIA. But the point is this. Donald Trump appointing William P. Barr. What's going on there? So that's a question that we will leave to explore for another day. But looking at the bigger sense here, since we last got together, we have seen Comey appear before the House committee, and of course, 234 pages of testimony was released this past Saturday. Now, I've read and reread this testimony and looked at various analyses of his testimony. Cheryl Atkinson had done a pretty good analysis of this. Why does this matter at this late date? Why does this matter, especially since Comey was not put under oath, was and did not recall or didn't know or refused to answer or couldn't answer the majority of questions. I don't know how many. He said he didn't know or couldn't recall or whatever, like 235 times. It's crazy. And I'm going to be getting into that in a second here. But here's the bottom line with all of this. And Andrew McCarthy coming out, regardless of what you think of him, or the website that he writes for, or where his columns appear on, Andrew McCarthy, stating why Donald Trump is likely to be indicted by a Manhattan U.S. attorney. When you combine everything that's taking place, a very clear picture emerges, and that's the fact that the deep state, whether in many forms, whether it is the use of the Southern District of New York on a federal level or on a state level, the Manhattan District Attorney, or in the larger sense in the intelligence community, faces such as Comey, former FBI director, Brennan, former CIA director. These people are deep state monsters, weasels, snakes, in my view, who are attempting to take down the president of the United States, Donald Trump, solely because he represents the will of the people. Much like, again, he's the antithesis of Macron in France. So you're looking at this, well, Donald Trump won against all odds, and even against a rigged political system, he won. Now we have to take him down by any means necessary. So ultimately, our fate is, what I'm saying is, our fate, in my view, should this be successful, look over at France. Look at the yellow vests. What color vests will we be wearing when this does happen, if it does happen? Because will Americans stand for this? Because their objective, the objective of the deep state, of course, is to push down the throats of every American, every person in the West, globalism. We must be subjugated to a one world government structure. This is all about collectivism, globalism, and at its roots, call it what you will, communism, Marxism, Stalinism, whatever flavor of communism, it all ends the same, results in the same. You've got two competing ideologies. And I will say this as well, and I'm more convinced of this as well. When we talk about this ideological rift, this potential civil war, or this civil war that's happening here in America today, you're not talking about Republicans and Democrats. You're talking about red versus blue in the larger sense, the ideologies of the once Democratic Party. It's not a Democratic Party anymore. It's more of a Marxist socialist party. And the outer fringe members would be the what we would call the normal Democrats in old parlance. So the epicenter or the core of the Democratic Party is no longer the liberals. It's no longer the progressives as we once knew those terms to apply. No, they are the Marxist, Stalinist, hardcore communists. And on the red side, whereas we had Republicans such as Paul Ryan, well, we're not looking at Paul Ryan now. Well, think of it this way. The rhinos have been pushed aside by the chief executive, that being Donald Trump. However, they are a, how can I put this? They are an ever overbearing presence in Congress and throughout the federal government. And that's where the fight is really at. Yeah, we are fighting the blue. We are fighting the communists, the Marxists. We know that. We could tell who they are. It's obvious. But when you look at the red ideology, the rhinos, the people closest and within the circle of the within the orbit of President Donald Trump, they're the ones who are more the most dangerous. And I'll tell you where I really learned a lot of the latter from. And this is something that this is one of the reasons why, for example, on our flagship show, The Hagmann Report, we have people like David Bossy on and Corey Lewandowski and Anthony Scaramucci, the insiders who know what's going on within the Trump White House. But they also know the players, the deep state, because they were immersed during the time period leading up to where we are today. For example, David Bossy, when we spoke with him last week, well, the enemies of President Trump, aside from the obvious, the more stealth-like and the more dangerous enemies are the people closest to him. Some of the people who are closest to him, or some of the people who will put their arm around him and say, hey, you know, hey, good job, buddy. I'm with you, buddy. Meanwhile, they're fixing on putting a knife in his back, in a figurative sense, or a political sense, but that's what's taking place. So you've got multiple fights here. I don't want to complicate it too much, but so anyway, what we're seeing taking place in France specifically and branching out into other countries in Europe is coming here, but in different forms. The ultimate fight will be the yellow, whatever iteration of the yellow vest here in America. That's coming here. Because the fight is still raging. We can see it with this hubris, this, Judge Jeanine Cardinal Comey, the hubris of the members of the now pushed aside intelligence community, but yet still, in some sense, controlling certain aspects, including and especially the mainstream media. But if that doesn't work, in other words, if the if Donald Trump's policies, procedures, presence, if they continue to erode at his ability to govern to the extent where he becomes so hobbled by not just the left but even some on the right, yeah, the emergence of whatever iteration of the yellow vest will take place here in America. I'm convinced of that. And maybe that's what they want. I don't know. When I say they, I'm talking about the globalists. So they can roll out, of course, their latest in terms of the widespread surveillance and the latest armaments to put us down. But one thing I'm sure of is they are going to push, coming right out of the gate, and watch for this now, coming right out of the gate in January. What do they want to do? What do you think that they want to do? Think about this now. What would be, you if you were coming into power and you see this potential revolt here in America against the globalists, against your objectives? What would be one of your first objectives? You think about this. All right, you got to control the narrative, of course. That's the First Amendment. But what would be another objective equally important as that? That's right. Disarming the public. So we are left with sticks and rocks and bottles as opposed to weaponry to put down a tyrannical government. So coming out, and this will be, in my view, this is based on my research, one of the most important objectives of the Democratic House takeover will be to disarm the American public. Because the only thing worse than a mob with bottles and rocks and sticks and iron bars and such, as we see in France, anything worse than that would be an armed uprising. So in addition to controlling the narrative, they're going to have to disarm us first. And that's already taking place. in certain areas, Boulder, Colorado, as one example, where we see this registry being created or that has been created. And if you don't register your AR-15 or your high-capacity magazines, you're going to be a felon. We're going to see how the compliance rate works out on that. But this will be happening at various levels, whether it be the local or county level or the state level or the federal level. And ultimately, it'll be a federal thing, but you can see this develop. So they're already neutering the objective or the objectionable content on the social media platforms, Facebook and Twitter. They're already sanctioned. Look, you post something on Twitter with, you might have 10, 15, 20,000, 15,000 or 50,000 followers. You post something there and it is shadow banned if it is not consistent with what the globalists want. So they're taking away, or they're controlling the first, your freedom, your ability to educate and inform via those platforms. But they're also coming for your weapons as well, because they anticipate this kind of reaction as they implement their globalist objectives. And President Trump is standing in the way. And at the moment, he is the only barrier between them and us. So every part of this now, every different aspect of this coup that we've been talking about for the last 690 days, or 573 days, every aspect of this is dedicated to take President Trump down. And they will. Let me just say this. They will die. They either will or they will die trying. I know how stupid that sounds, or rudimentary that sounds. But let's just talk honestly here. They are all in. If this was a Texas Hold'em card game, they're all in. And we must be too. But what they're counting on is us folding. That's what they're counting on. We're going to fold. But if we have 3, 5, 10% of the population, of the vocal population, the vocal conservatives, as we know them by definition to be, if we have that number, if we can count on that number, much like the American Revolution, and by the way, you toss that 3% number out or 8% number out with respect to the number of people involved in the American Revolution in the 1700s, you will see this blowback by the leftist media saying, oh, that's not true. No, that's not true. That number is manufactured. And of course, they don't want, the objective there is the media does not, and the controllers of information, they don't want you to believe that you or me or you and me together, just two of us or five or ten of us, can make a difference. But we can. And we must. Boy, I got off on a tangent there. So let me pull back by saying this. And I apologize. Every time I do this, I switch places here, or I move a little bit with the microphone. So if I sound a little bit different, I apologize. The war in which we find ourselves here in America, the war that's against President Donald Trump, is taking place on a number of levels, a number of different factions, or a number of different fronts, I should say. For example, you've got the deep state and the exposure of the deep state by way of the intelligence community now being exposed. And remember what we're seeing right now, the deception. It's a legacy of deceit by Barack Hussein Obama and Hillary Clinton. And even though they're not the best of friends, I mean, consider a Maoist and a Stalinist, their objectives ultimately are the same, but they don't have to be the best of friends if their objectives are the same. So you've got the Hillary Clinton, Barack Hussein Obama cabal, or the remnants thereof, still enmeshed within the federal government, and those outside of that structure are either within the media or acting as tactical guerrillas, in terms of warfare, such as Comey. Now, with respect to Comey, I want to get into his the 235-page transcript. All you really need to know, really, is, I suppose at the end of the day, is that this guy has one hell of a memory problem, or he's an imbecile, or he's a liar. Now, I would suspect that the latter, of course, given everything that I've reviewed. Cheryl Atkinson did a piece that was reprinted in the Epoch Times that went through his testimony, and I'll just highlight that just briefly. I uploaded the transcript itself on Scribd, and the link is accessible inside the Hagman Patreon forum. But Cheryl Atkinson, writing for Epoch Times, reprinted in the Epoch Times, did note that on Saturday, Congress released a 234-page transcript of this closed-door testimony by Comey. And, before I get into that, one thing. If you go to HagmanReport.com, you got to check out, I put two posts up. I think it was early yesterday morning. One historical, that's from Bishop Fulton Sheen. Back, I believe the publication on that was like 1954. And it's 20-some minutes long. But he takes aim at communism, and well ahead of his time. And I had written, sadly, that some people would not get past the fact that he's a Roman Catholic, and or get past the fact that this is in black and white. You know, oh, how boring. There's no, you know, flash bangs. There's no glossiness. But the message is so critical. But the other piece was from Judge Jeanine Pirro. And she just gives Jim Jordan the what for, man. I mean, 6 minutes, and I was going to play it today. I'm not going to play it now. 6 minutes of classic Enough is Enough. The American people have had it with Congress, and it's brilliantly done. I don't think it was scripted. I think she just went off, and she just went off on Congress. I mean, just righteous anger, righteous indignation, and Jim Jordan just happened to be sitting in the seat, you know, there, and man, again, she gave him what for. So check that out at HagmanReport.com. And again, the transcript for Comey is in the Hagman Patreon forum, but you can find it just about anywhere. But I had put it out there as soon as it, I think it was almost as quickly as it came out, I had put it on the Hagman Patreon forum, uploaded it to Scribd, and the link is there. But she breaks it down into a number of areas, and I will do the same here. The Hillary Clinton probe. And what Comey did was he confirmed that Strzok and Page, who we've talked about, served both on the team investigating Hillary Clinton's email practices, and the team that was and continues to investigate the Donald Trump-Russia connection. You can find that on page 18 of the transcript. In other words, even though the investigation is still going on, but they're not part of it, that being Strzok and Page. And, of course, the lovebirds there. But they were pulled from Special Counsel Robert Mueller, that investigation in last summer, after Horowitz discovered that they had exchanged pejorative text messages and emails. All right. Well, Comey said that he would not have allowed Strzok and Page to serve on the Hillary email investigation if he had known about their private communications. Now, here, just keep in mind, you got the head of the flippin' FBI, for crying out loud. You got the head of the FBI who either cannot be bothered with the oversight of key investigations. I guess the question is, are you telling me as head of the FBI, seriously, are you seriously telling me as head of the FBI that you've got an investigation into a presidential candidate and that you just basically, well, you know what? I just let my guys do what they do, right? Yeah, I don't think so. So in my view, you know, Cardinal Comey, as Pirro calls him, is in fact a flippin' liar. He should be put under oath next time. And I would also follow Paul Sperry on Twitter as well, and follow Paul Sperry's writings. I'm going to try to get him on our flagship show because he's got some good information and good analysis about this. But he's also questioned about Attorney General Loretta Lynch. Let's not forget her. That tarmac meeting between Lynch and Bill Clinton somewhat 5 days before Hillary Clinton's FBI interview. Yeah, he was asked about that, about it being potentially inappropriate. But Comey said, look, I didn't really try to find out what the substance of, you know, what they talked about. That's on pages 33 through 34. He first revealed the existence of the Lynch material in his book. That's you just can't make this stuff up. And the according to a report on CNN, the material may refer to discussions between Lynch and Clinton staffer, a Clinton staffer, and someone else, including Debbie Wasserman Schultz. However, Lynch denied discussing any aspects of the investigation with them. So, you know, it's Comey said that there was an appearance of conflict, or the appearance that Lynch was compromised in some fashion. And Comey said that Lynch should have recused herself from the Clinton investigation. That's on page 77 of the transcripts. And he said that he raised concerns about Lynch's objectivity with McCabe, and that Lynch was subsequently briefed and interviewed about the nature of the material by McCabe and others. But hey, you know what? I really didn't get into it. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. That's according to, again, Comey. The whole thing was a dog and pony show. Again, it extended into Hillary Clinton's FBI interview, giving two witnesses, Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson, immunity from prosecution, and allowed them to sit in on the interview with Hillary Clinton. Unprecedented, by the way. But Comey said, yeah, it's unusual. It's unusual for the FBI to have allowed Mills and Samuelson to sit in on the FBI interview. You know, ideally, you'd really want people not to know other stories, so they're not able to sync their stories together. But he just doesn't remember why the arrangement was allowed. He said that the decision was made by the DOJ and not the FBI. But you know what? The FBI didn't object. He said he doesn't remember whether he personally knew of the arrangement. You know what? You got to be a total moron or a liar. So this is an exhibit in the absolute hubris, the criminal hubris of James Comey. And I'm talking about a Republican or some self-identified Republican. This guy is no more Republican. Again, the Republican-Democrat meme, model, paradigm, whatever you want to call it. No, it's the globalist, again, the objective, the ideology that's driving these actions. Remember, last week I said, belief is the driver of action. So if you are adherent to a globalist ideology, your actions are going to reflect that. And once more, this is all about the globalist ideology being shoved down the throats of every American and the various institutions, including and especially the intelligence community, pushing it or exploiting or using the being weaponized to push this globalist agenda. And let me stray away from this and give you one example that's very clear now of where we're at in terms of the time where we stand. You talk about a globalist agenda, and you talk about weaponization, especially of the big tech. Well, listen to this. And in the context of the globalist agenda, the Hagman Report, we cannot. In fact, Google has refused to approve, Apple has refused to approve our app, our mobile app, right? Which we spent $8,000 on, and it's ready to roll out, but Apple says, oh, no. Basically, no, we're not allowed to, you know, have our app rolled out. Just like Alex Jones was completely deplatformed everywhere, and his app was taken down. Well, we're not permitted to even have it have our app hosted by Apple at this point. But hey, that's the way it goes. So in order to listen, of course, rather than having a very easy time at it, well, Eric the Tech has made it very easy for you to listen and to watch by way of our website. But anyway, that's not the point. The point is this. Instead of approving our app, and instead of or in addition to deplatforming and taking away the app for InfoWars, Google now has approved an app for Muslims to report people who commit blasphemy. Think about this for a second. There's a new Android app that was launched with the focus on allowing Muslims to report individuals who commit blasphemy or insult Islam. The app is known as Smart Pakem, P-A-K-E-M. It was launched in Indonesia last month at the request of the Indonesian government. Now, what this will do, it will allow users and government officials to uphold Sharia law and to target people who hold misguided beliefs in violation of Islamic law, which forbids any insult or any critical discussion of Islam or critical discussions against Muhammad, or even at its core, the recognition of any other religion besides Islam. Think about that for a second. Now, that's where the big tech companies are colluding with and conspiring with the Islamic component. And the reason the Islamic component is such a threat right now, especially to the people in the West, is because Sharia and Islam conforms best with the globalist agenda. It might not seem that way, but it does. And I don't have time to get into all the factors as to why. But here it is. Now the weaponization. This is to turn in your neighbor. Turn in your family member. Oh, sure, it's in Indonesia right now. But guess what? We're seeing pieces come into America. If you listened to Brigitte Gabriel last week on the flagship show, and if you haven't listened to it, I would urge you to listen to it. It's up on our YouTube page. Just go to HagmanReport.com and you can, or HagmanReportLive.com, but you can find it, or our YouTube page, whatever, but listen to her. But see, this all is working together. The erosion of borders. And I started out by talking about France and about the uprising there. Well, a big part of this revolt involves the infusion, the forced infusion of Islam into these Western countries. And this is the response. Well, this is the bigger picture. And again, I started talking about the revolution, the Yellow Vest Revolution in France and how it's going to come here. But as the globalist leaders here in the United States, and when I say leaders, I'm talking about the field tacticians, the field generals, in addition to the politicians, but those foot soldiers here in America who are forcing this upon the American public, as this grows in intensity, as their last gasp to maintain this globalist agenda, as this grows, they're weaponizing everything. They're throwing everything at us. They're opening so many battlefronts. It's incredible. And again, this is to take down President Donald Trump. This is to take away that stopgap between the globalists and the American people. And that speed bump, that wall, is in fact President Trump and his America First agenda, his Make America Great Again agenda, him being the antithesis of French President Macron, whatever, however you want to pronounce it. This is what we're facing today. So when we see things take place in America, when you see the Comey hearings, when you see other things, and I haven't even gotten into the Clinton Foundation things, which is just absolutely incredible. Judicial Watch has done an incredible job in getting the right judge, or in fact getting the judge, I happen to say correct judge, the right judge, to rule in the favor of Judicial Watch about Hillary Clinton's emails. In fact, I'll do a show on that because it's worthy of an entire show, because that could very well open up Hillary Clinton to some criminal liability. Now, alternatively, you've got the deep state, and I wanted to get this in before the end of the end of the episode. You've got the deep state also attempting what they couldn't do through and can't do through Mueller as special counsel. They are relying, the deep state is, that is, and Mueller as the black hat leader of the deep state, at least in terms of the special counsel. And he's no good guy, no matter what anyone says. He's pushing off certain things. In fact, the consequence of the Cohen, Michael Cohen, guilty plea, he is pushing off the prosecution of Donald Trump to, in this case, state court, Manhattan, U.S. attorney. And this is where I mentioned earlier, where former U.S. attorney Andrew McCarthy has said that, hey, Trump very well could be indicted by Manhattan U.S. attorney. Hey, don't shoot me. This is what McCarthy's saying. Prosecutors say that the former lawyer to President Donald Trump, Michael Cohen, deserves substantial prison time despite his cooperation. But the major takeaway from the 40-page sentencing memorandum filed by federal prosecutors Friday, this past Friday, for Michael Cohen, is the fact that President Donald Trump, his former personal attorney, is this: the president is very likely to be indicted on a charge of what? Colluding with the Russians? No. Conspiracy to make Russia take over the United States? No. No. For violating federal campaign finance laws. It's been obvious for some time that President Trump is the principal subject of the investigation as it applies to Cohen that's still being conducted by the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. What I'm saying to you is this. This is yet another way they are attempting to take down President Trump. This, by the way, dominated the news cycle on the left, the MSNBC, CNB. Oh, my goodness. If you watched any of that, this spells impeachment for Donald Trump. Donald Trump should be really worried. So should Pence. Oh, and guess who's going to be third in succession as of January 3rd? 2019. Yeah, Nancy Pelosi. Ultimately, they want to see a Pelosi presidency. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. But in a nutshell, Cohen earlier pleaded guilty to multiple counts of business and tax fraud, violating campaign finance law, and making false statements to Congress regarding unsuccessful efforts to build a Trump Tower in Moscow. To paraphrase Seinfeld, not that there's anything wrong with that. And believe me, there's not. There's nothing illegal about that. Yes, Cohen stated that he did the hands-on work orchestrating hush money, by the way, to women who claimed to have had sexual liaisons with Donald Trump a number of years ago. Now, Donald Trump has since denied this, but when Cohen pleaded guilty in August, prosecutors induced him to make an extraordinary statement in open court that the payments to the women were made in coordination with and at the direction of the candidate for federal office, Donald Trump. For shame. I can't, because of time, get into this, but what's dominating the left's headlines is President Trump, get ready for impeachment. January 3rd is coming. Get ready for impeachment. This is the clamor and the clang of the globalists. My question, ending this episode, if this is successful, or if this advances, how will we respond here in America? Look at France. Look what's going on there, extending to Belgium and Netherlands and Denmark. Look what's going on. Is that our future? The globalists want it to be. And I've got to say, I believe it is. Hey, thanks for joining me this morning. If you like what you heard, please spread the word about this program. Hashtag DHRS. If we can make that a thing. Tell people about this program. And tell people about the Hagman Report as well. Hey, may God bless you. Have a great Monday.
The Doug Hagman Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagman Report. Tune in to The Hagman Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com.